Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Founders Grid, sponsored by Gaper.io. Today we have Tessa. Tessa is the head of developer relations at Fast and she's the founder at Devocate. Tessa, welcome to the show.
Hi, happy to be here.
Can you share a brief background about yourself, what you've been up to?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it'll be too brief, but I'll try to make it as brief as possible. So lately, this is week five for me, which is really exciting, of joining Fast and, head of DevRel there, which is really, really great opportunity. Also founder of Devocate. Devocate does a variety of different things, which is kind of fun. I've really taken my experience with the developer audiences and developer relations and leadership and brought that into a really cool opportunity to start to educate and engage more folks and kind of teach them more about developer audience. The original insight with Devocate and my original plan is to actually build a software solution for developer customer advocacy. Definitely still a big dream of mine, but kind of taking that path slowly and starting to build up that runway of education and starting to really showcase what you can do with some advocacy and customer advocacy programs. Previous to that, I was, managed developer community over at Twitter. Before that, I've been in a few startups out of San Francisco, one of which is Pantheon. And really kind of over the last, I'd say probably 6 years now, I've been working remote for all of these companies from different places that work best for my family. So.
Nice. So, coming down to, you've been working remotely for 6 years, right?
Yep.
But on the other side, you've been kind of like your roles have been more about, heading, building relations, community building aspect kind of things, right? So
yep.
How has that experience been totally being online?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially the last, year, obviously with COVID, it has felt like everything has been online, but admittedly before that, it didn't always feel like I was constantly having to like live and drive and build and do all these things from an online standpoint. Because for me, it just felt like I'm in my place, you're in your place. And still, we're still working together on the same things, right? I think that's the nice thing about building community and building these types of relationships with developers is that it is the perfect audience of folks who don't want to go to an office all the time. They don't want to be in person all the time. And don't get me wrong, like lots of folks who are in community and lots of folks who are in developer relations want to be.
Hello.
Are you still there?
Yeah, sorry. I think we got hit by a lag. But please keep on talking. I think I'll the team will switch the audios eventually after the podcast. So can we start off again with the second question, if that's okay?
Yes. Reminds me of what the question was again, and then I'll start over.
So building communities online, building the world is learning today, but you've been doing it for the last 6 years. So what are the key takeaways or things, or can you share a bit more of your experience on it?
Yes. Okay, got it. All right. Yeah, definitely. Being remote for the last 6 years has really given me a lens and an outlook to be able to just really cater to my audiences in a better way. I know that, DevRel notoriously likes to send folks to conferences, obviously pre-COVID, and do a lot of very in-person driven events. And I think that those local in-person events are incredibly valuable because there's a level of relationship that you get when you get to meet someone face-to-face, but we're also able to do that through Zoom. I think just we're not in this mindset of, hey, this is how we meet people now. And between you and I never want to only meet people online. I love meeting people in person. I love getting to hug my friends and be close to people I care about. But the thing about some of these things when you're looking at it from a professional level is that you're almost excluding this giant group and just giant audience that can't attend conferences for whatever reason. Maybe it's because they have a new baby at home. Maybe they've got a big family. Maybe they've got a pet that needs serious medical attention. Maybe they can't get childcare. Maybe they can't afford it, right? There's just like all these things that are kind of blockers for people to be able to attend things in person. And I feel really strongly about being able to build strong communities, strong audiences online. And then when you get that chance to finally have that in-person event or that maybe those local chapter events, which I think, you know, work really well, you're still able to meet and have some of those relationships, but you have been able to build this nice foundation online. And it just allows for a lot more inclusivity into those communities.
Got it. And so, you know, okay, now just I just want to, I love the term that you use, a chief mind exploring officer, you know. Can you elaborate more on that and what you're doing in Devocate?
Absolutely. So this is actually kind of a joke at first, but it actually has some truth to it. And I'm a very humble person, so it's kind of hard for me to say like, oh, I'm really great at something. But, you know, one of my dear friends, he's actually one of the co-founders at CompServe. When I were kind of talking about that, and we were just talking about some of the insights that I have provided. And by no means am I saying I know all the things, but I just have this knack for understanding developers and what they truly want from their community, what they want from their products, what they want from whatever that situation might be. And I've really been able to leverage that kind of knack and be able to produce content and create materials that help educate other folks so that they can start to kind of have that similar knack. And so when Mac and I were talking about it, again, I don't remember how we were kind of like laughing about it. And he's actually the one that came up with like the leaving it as a CEO. Cause I was like, well, what if I just say I'm not the CEO and I come up with a different acronym. And he's like, no, you can leave it. Cause you could say that you're like the chief, the chief mind exploding officer, which, you know, it's still CEO, right? But the mind is kind of snuck in there. And it again, kind of a joke, but it really has some truth to it. I have been able to help a lot of really awesome clients who have come in with new products, right? Like a lot of developers, especially who decided to build a tool, build a product that served their needs, that's, you know, solved their problems, and then helps them get that off the ground, whether it be building a community first so that they can talk and engage and learn from their first users to build their product in a different way or to add new features, or whether it be anything from the experience of onboarding or their marketing techniques. A lot of times I come into startups and I'm like, shut down all of your paid ads. Let's take a step back. Let's use that budget and let's find different ways to use it. And sometimes startups don't even, I shouldn't even say startups. Sometimes we're like pre-startup. It's like in the building phase. Anyways, and oftentimes they just maybe don't even have like a marketing campaign. And we're just starting from like zero of, hey, I built this cool thing. I don't know how to get it off the ground. Can you help me? And so Devocate has really been a lot of consulting work before I joined Twitter. And a lot of really awesome community and education work. I just launched my community last weekend, as of yesterday. So excited. Started being very active in there on a daily basis. Sorry.
Congratulations on that. So can you share a bit more on that? You know, what's it all about on the community?
Of course, I would happily love to do that. So the community is actually a community that serves three different audiences, which I have learned is a little bit tricky to navigate. I've definitely done a lot of community building, but it's been with one or two audiences. And in this situation, it's three, which has been tricky, but it is three different audiences. One is developers. Developers join the community so that they can learn developer advocacy. How do I improve my public speaking skills? How do I build a social following? How do I think about the impact of my activities as I'm engaging in this developer advocacy world? And if they're not someone who is interested in leading up to that DevRel career that the education would allow them to be able to do, as well as experience, which I'll get to that, they're at least able to meet some of their favorite product teams. And so when you think about that, hey, they get to meet their favorite product teams, that brings me into the second audience. Those are companies. So companies, it can be founders, it can be developers who are building a tool and they're like, oh my gosh, how do I launch this after I build it? It can be a very established enterprise company that hasn't tapped the surface of customer developer advocacy. And those companies join, they're able to get a lot of educational materials on how to launch customer advocacy campaigns, how to leverage in the most amazing and positive way for their developers, leverage those developer customers to build up their audience, build up their growth, build up their reputation. It's really the kind of concept of saying, hey, I've got a DevRel team internally. What if I had a DevRel team externally and it was only just my awesome customers that love my product? And then the third audience is community leaders. So folks like myself and anyone else in DevRel, anyone else in community building, anyone looking to kind of build these scalable, impactful programs. I am serving them in education and peer mentorship, just engagement, working with them through all of that, providing, white papers and courses and all these other services to all the audiences, to really educate them in each of these different areas so that they can take this developer customer advocacy angle that I am so in love with because it works so well, and just let them leverage that and start to learn how to use that. Eventually, DevKit will actually be a software solution that will guide companies through their advocacy programs. It could be a startup who's at stage zero and they have zero customers. How do you get your first customer? Then it could be, hey, you've got 10 customers now. Let's start talking to them. Let's get feedback from them. And all the tools you need to kind of reach out and do those things. So it's very exciting. I'm excited to launch the community, excited to build momentum around this area, and then hopefully start to build a software solution.
Interesting. Good luck for that. So now coming down to, we call our podcast kind of like sprint podcast where we try to keep them, short and precise and within 8 to 12 minutes, So mental health is something of a topic that has been under discussion, and team burnouts is something of a discussion that has been going around since August 2020, because everyone has been forced to work from home. Not everyone had the capabilities, not everyone had a bigger place, and then human interaction, energy from humans and everything, so what practices or what things have you adopted in your work culture with your colleagues that in order to cater to the mental health?
Yeah, this is a super important topic. I'm glad you brought this up. By no means am I a whiz in this area, but I will say that 2020, I think, was a year of self-reflection for a lot of folks. I think it was definitely a year of self-reflection for myself and starting to see what I truly need to feel successful, because we're all stuck in these kind of weird situations. For some people who have been working remote for years, like myself, my work life didn't feel like it changed all that much. It was actually nice in some capacities to be at a company where everyone was remote, because it allowed for some of that, as I'm sure lots of your podcasts have talked about, some of that maybe not remote first thinking. So there's a lot of companies that are half remote and half in office, and it's really hard to balance that, and it's really hard to nail down that ability to have them in both places. And so I've loved the fact that my coworkers are all remote and they can relate to some of my problems. And I think that's going to bring a stronger mental health space here in the coming months. I think that some folks are still trying and they're still working through what it's like to be at home. But I think we're all starting to kind of find our groove there. But what I think is really important is just having a way and having kind of almost a circle of folks that you feel like you just reach out to. I have to say, actually, I just found out about Marco Polo, the app, just a few weeks ago. And I think that I wish I would have found Marco Polo months ago, admittedly. But essentially, it's video talking back and forth. It's such an easy concept. We could easily do that through text message and just record a quick video snippet and text it back, right? But none of us have thought about that. None of us have been forced in these situations where we don't get to see our grandma or see our parents or see our siblings, because they're in their home and their space doing their own thing with their own kids or their own families, and also trying to stay safe. So I think having a group of folks that you can rely on, that you can reach out to, for me, I've started doing that through Marco Polo. It's been incredibly valuable. But I also think being a little bit more vulnerable, and it's really hard for all of us to do that. It's hard for us to say, hey, I need people right now, or hey, I need this thing that could be whatever it is for you, right? For me, it's dog time. I need all the dog time in the world when I'm not in such a great space. But I think relying on your close network and making sure that you're doing that. I think being more vulnerable at work, being more vulnerable with your peers and sharing a little bit more about your personal life gives you that sense of like community inside of your workspace that I strongly recommend. And really like whoever is in your direct household, whether that be children, spouses, friends, roommates, dogs, cats, whatever it might be, I think, relying a little bit more on those folks to work together. I've been a lot more open with my children lately about how I'm feeling and what I'm thinking. And I think that's been incredibly valuable for my family specifically.
Got it. So, which brings me to the next question on the last question, do you think remote work is here to stay, or will the world go back to normal, or do you think it's going to be a hybrid routine, and can we stick to the hybrid routine,
Yeah, this is a super great question. So I think that there's going to be a combination. I think there are still a lot of folks, and especially a lot of companies, like Apple and Google are pretty strict on their non-remote working situations. I think that there are going to be some outliers of companies that we're going to see that are just never going to want to go fully remote for whatever reason. I actually really question those reasons, because I start to wonder if it's like micromanagement, if it's wanting to know where your people are, which again comes back to micromanagement. But I do really think that there's going to be this opportunity for more companies to be remote and for more companies to be more profitable in that space. Just because when you think about it, office space is expensive, especially when you're a tech company who's like serving snacks and serving beverages and serving catered lunch and doing all these like office amenities. And don't get me wrong, those are really nice to have. But honestly, like as someone who is working at a company and who's been remote for a long time, I'd rather see something else, because as a remote employee, those benefits don't help me any. And so I think that when companies start to see the shift and the exclusivity that they're providing by having this office space and these remote workers, I think they'll start to see that it might not always make sense. I know that there's always going to be a place for a physical office with specific organizations who need whatever it might be in person, right? But I think that when there is an opportunity to be able to be remote, I do think that businesses are going to start to see the value and the fact that their profit margins can shift hugely if they can think about how they can implement remote. And if they can do that on the full company level, I think it'll be very profitable. And I think we will see a lot more remote workers and a lot more employees getting benefits that actually matter, like ergonomic chairs, because we sit in them all day. And I'm very excited for that world, but that's my hopes. I don't know if that's necessarily what I think is a forecast.
Yeah, got it. No, that's an interesting thing. That's a super interesting thing. Tessa, thank you so much for being on the show. We're just going to pause the podcast and take it offline, but we could have talked for another 30 minutes on the podcast, but my team kind of like, they just cut it off after 12. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Of course. Well, if you're like, hey, there's just something more to this conversation, we can always do another one and do like a very focused follow-up, so it doesn't feel like too much, Tessa.